Welcome to the Unmeasured Podcast. I'm your host, Simi Bowditch. Thank you so much for being here with me today. One of the unavoidable parts of being a human being is experiencing grief. And while I wish that we could be here today on the Unmeasured Podcast talking about all of the things that you could do in your life to be able to avoid grief and to never have to experience it, I know that it is a reality of all of our human experiences. And I truly can't think of anyone who I would rather be having this very heartfelt conversation with than my wonderful, dear friend, Elizabeth Yasinoff. Thank you so much for being here with me today.
Thanks, Simi. I'm so glad to be here.
Absolutely. For anyone who does not know Elizabeth, she is a wife, a mom, an attorney who has paused her legal career to focus on her passion for supporting parents grieving the loss of a baby in pregnancy or infancy. She is a mom to two babies on earth and two babies in heaven. Elizabeth's first pregnancy ended in a miscarriage at 8 weeks, and her second when she gave birth to Jacob Dale Yasinoff at 39 weeks in 2016. Unforeseen complications developed in labor, causing Jacob to lose oxygen, and despite an emergency C-section, he was never able to stabilize after being resuscitated at birth. Now, Elizabeth honors his short life by using her experience with grief to connect with and help others through a nonprofit that she co-founded with other lost moms called Alive in My Heart. Elizabeth, you and your husband and your two living children, dog, cat, and two bunnies, live in Granville, Ohio, and you have just poured so much love into the world since you experienced these two devastating losses. And as your friend and someone who loves you and cares about you deeply, I have been in awe of how you've navigated it all. And I'm just so grateful that you're willing to be here today with us sharing a little bit about your process and your experience.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for those kind words. And you and Tim were some of the people that were really, really there for us, especially in the early days of intense grief. And so I can't think of anyone, you know, that I'd rather be here with as well, just having this conversation and, you know, bringing light to an experience that, as you said, you know, we're all inevitably going to have the experience of grief at some point. I wish it weren't true. But you brought up a really, I think, powerful point about love. And so that's kind of one of the things I just wanted to start with, is that it's been a really helpful reframe for me that grief is love. And so when you think about someone who is really intensely grieving, it can sometimes feel scary or worrisome to the people around them, I think, who witness it. And to help folks understand who maybe haven't had a grief experience yet or an intense one, that it's just that person loves deeply. And I think that's when you see someone grieving deeply, just remembering that it's because they love deeply.
Oh my gosh, Elizabeth, that's such a beautiful way to think about it. And I think any of us who have had an intense grief experience are probably all nodding our heads like, yes, that is so true. That is why you grieve so deeply, because you love so deeply. And I think to maybe like as an extension of that, it's like for some people, a lot of the grief that we experience, I'm sure there is some grief that has an end date, right? The grief may end, but I think for some of like the deeper grief that we experience in life, the loss of someone who we love so much, grief doesn't really go away, and it might change. And there may be days where, you know, it hits you differently, but the grief is always there. And thinking about it, like that's because the love is always there, is such a beautiful way, even within ourselves, to have the ability to hold it, to be able to say like, yeah, this grief is with me every day. It probably will be, because I know that the love is going to be there every single day. Like nothing is going to make me stop loving this person.
Yes, exactly.
I definitely think that the question that we're talking about today aligns with this conversation about grief and how grief is love. A listener sent in the following question. I am navigating such intense grief in my life right now after the loss of my brother. It feels like I'll never be free from this. I don't want it to swallow my life whole. At the same time, I don't want to ignore how I feel or push it down. How do you process grief while still moving forward and living your life? How do you find hope or happiness again? And I, as I was reading this question, when it initially came in, I was thinking about after the day after my dad passed away, you know, like we were, I guess it was probably technically the same day, right? Because it happened in the middle of the night and we're at the hospital and we came home to the house and it was really early in the morning and, you know, we hadn't slept and got into bed. And I just was laying there thinking like, oh, I can't sleep. I'm so tired, but I'm so wired, and sitting there feeling like I was in a twilight zone where I'm like, how could this thing have just happened? But the world keeps going and life keeps going and people keep living, and I'm going to open up my Gmail and I'm going to have emails that people sent me, and I have to take care of my, you know, I got to take care of my child. And it's the weirdest thing to feel like, how do I process this like out of body intense experience that I'm having and also keep going? And will I ever like feel hope again? It really felt like I was made up of plate tectonics and they just shifted and there was this like big gaping, like, you know, earthquake that just happened within me, but everyone else was fine.
Yeah. Yes. Those feelings are so real. It feels isolating. I think part of what you're describing is that feeling of isolation. And like you said, the rest of the world keeps moving around you and you're here like trying to go through the motions because there are things that you have to do, but there's this huge hole in your heart and there's this heaviness. For me, I got really cold, which I later learned can be a symptom, I guess, of grief, that you can feel really, really cold. And it was July when I lost Jacob. So I just remember like wearing a coat to walk around the block and just being cold. I don't know. It takes over your body and your mind. And it's just very, very real. And so I appreciated from the question, I think like the healthy perspective that the person has about, you know, this being something that you do have to feel it and you have to process it. And, you know, you can't push it down. It's because it's going to come up at some point.
Yes. And I don't know if you feel this way or if anyone else feels this way, or if this is one of those things that is just me, but like also not only can you not push it down and can you not make it go away, but for me, I'm like, yeah, my grief is part of me. Like I truly feel like a different version of myself.
Yeah, I definitely do as well. And it's hard to put words to that. So I'm struggling to try to describe the ways that I think I've changed. And whether I could have recognized that, I guess, at the time and in the midst of it is a different question than how, like, now I recognize it as, I think I have more empathy. I feel like I can relate to others who are going through tragic or traumatic circumstances in a way that I never could. I feel like it's added a depth to a lot of my relationships because stuff that's surface level just doesn't feel authentic to me anymore, I guess, after going through such a significant experience. So yeah, I don't think it's just you.
In the early days of grieving, what, if anything, did you feel like helped you? And I don't mean helped the grief to go away, because like we just talked about that, you know, I don't think that's a very realistic goal, but maybe yeah. what helped you to feel supported, or what helped you to feel seen, or what helped you to feel like a little bit of, I'm not alone in this.
Yeah, I, for sure, being surrounded with people who didn't try to fix it, didn't try to find a silver lining or a, you know, happy at it sounds crazy to think that anyone would try, but I've heard stories, and you know, people are well-meaning, but sometimes, but so I guess just finding those people that could just sit with me and let our interaction be whatever I was comfortable with at that time, whether we would talk specifically about Jacob or how I was feeling, or whether we would talk about something totally different, but with like no expectation that I was going to be normal or who I was before the loss. And then I think like little things like taking a shower. I mean, it sounds so simple, but really just giving myself a lot of permission to celebrate like the smallest bits of normalcy that I could have. So like taking a shower, putting on real clothes, I don't know, sitting at the table to eat a meal instead of just sitting up in bed to eat it. And yeah, I mean, really just honoring the small steps I felt like I could take to feel human, feel awake, not be in bed. Yeah.
You mentioned people not saying things like, there's a silver lining here, right? Or trying to like spin it into a positive, which I agree. It's hard to imagine someone doing that. And I do think it happens often, because I think people are so uncomfortable with grief. People are so uncomfortable with loss. People are so uncomfortable with seeing someone that they love in pain that they want to try to fix it, right? And they want to try to make it go away. And again, if, as we're talking about it here, it's like, why would anyone think that saying that would make any of this pain go away? But I think that's where statements that when you are grieving are like, why would you ever say that to me? I think people are just projecting their own discomfort with grief. And I think, one of the things that you shared about how grief has changed you and has given you more empathy and has allowed you to offer that to others in, you know, an even deeper way. I think that that's something that when you go through a really intense grief, that you are able to hold that for someone else, with someone else, without feeling like the discomfort of wanting to fix it for them.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree. And so I guess, you know, you asked about the very, very early days of grief. I think after the very, very early days of grief, when I started to like enter the world again, one of the huge things that helped me was connection with other, in my case, other moms who had lost babies, and being able to share my experience with someone who knew or had been through something similar, and just being able to spend time with those people who had a similar perspective, you know, informed by a similarly tragic and traumatic experience. So that when we spent time together, whether we were talking about that or not, it just felt really comforting to do whatever, talk about whatever with someone who you knew got it. And so that connection was just huge for me. And that is the main reason why I started the nonprofit that I started, because I just couldn't have imagined walking this path without some of the other women that I found through it. And I wanted to make sure that, you know, no one else had to do that if we could prevent it, you know, that we could help foster that connection.
That gift of connection that you have given and are giving so many people is just invaluable. And I do think that there is such a power in being with someone who, even when you're not talking about it, you just know that your whole experience like can take up space wherever you are. And it's like, this person isn't like forgetting about this part of my story, or this person isn't forgetting about, you know, this human being who was really important to me. Even if we're not talking about it right now, that memory is here and it gets to take up space, and I don't have to like shove it away in some drawer and pretend like it's not part of who I am.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
In the early days of grief, but also as you started to come out of the early days and re-entering into the world and needing to do more just day-to-day life stuff, what helped you to feel your feelings, right? Like, what helped you to actually feel your grief, process your grief? Because I think a lot of people might know that they need to feel it, but the logistics of feeling, I think, can get tricky for people. And I'm curious, what was supportive for you in feeling whatever was coming up for you, whatever, you know, whatever part of grief you were experiencing?
Yeah, it's funny. I haven't thought about this in a long time, actually. But as soon as you started asking that, I immediately remembered kind of what I used to do, because, you know, to function in the world, you have to kind of put your grief on a shelf and say, you know, that's here, that grief, that love is always here and a part of me. But right now I have to compartmentalize almost and go out and do this thing, whatever it may be, go grocery shopping, go to a family function, although those can be a minefield in and of themselves. But, you know, when you feel ready to do those things, you've decided to do those things, putting it on a shelf. But what I actually remember specifically doing, because I knew there was grief there that needed to come out, was I would like almost intentionally, when I had time and a safe space, intentionally trigger myself is how I would describe it. Like, I would come home and I would say, okay, now's my time that I need to be in this love, this grief. And I would take out the pictures that I have of Jacob and I would just look at them and cry and like let it be as deep and as long as it needed to be. And that really helped me, I guess, at that time.
Yep. Intentionally creating that space to feel. And I really love what you shared about intentionally triggering yourself, like looking at things, listening to things, whatever it might be, to bring up emotion. With my dad, I have a voice message that he, like the last voice message that I had from him. And things happened very quickly at the end, but we were in a time where I started to have the awareness of like, I need to be saving these things, you know? And so I have this last voice message saved. And for me, I would, you know, be in an alone place. Like, actually, for me, my car parked in my garage. Like, I would, you know, pull into the garage, turn my car off, close the garage door. I'd just be like sitting there in the dark. And then I would open up my phone and I would listen to this voice message and I would just let myself have a full-on emotional release, however long I needed to. Okay. And now I'm going into the house. And it was having that private space where I felt like I could wail, cry, scream, whatever needed to happen. And then like, all right, we release the pressure valve and I'll let it fill back up and we'll do this again soon. We'll meet back here again soon for another, you know, for another date like that. And on the flip side of that, there are also times where I know that I can't go there. So I think Tim made a lot of audio recordings of my dad, like fun things that he was doing, like if he was singing or whatever, like he was collecting all these audio recordings. And I remember he'd be like, oh, I want to listen to this of your dad. And I would say, like, just wait till I leave the room. Like, there were times where I just knew, I'm like, I can't emotionally go there right now. And I'm not ready to, like, emotionally go there with a lot of people sitting around. So, like, I'm going to remove myself from this situation. And because if I listen to this, I don't know if I'm going to be able to put the toothpaste back into the tube in enough time to like go to do whatever we have to do in like 30 minutes.
Yes. Yeah, no, absolutely. You almost have to have like bound, I guess I shouldn't say almost, you do have to have boundaries, like emotional boundaries. And you know, in the very, very, very early days, there isn't such a thing, and there isn't putting it on the shelf, and like you're just in it. And then I think, as at least for me, as I got further and further out, there were those times of, and I think people around me who, you know, were a couple degrees separated, couldn't believe I was doing that. Like I said, intentionally triggering myself. I think that's how they saw it. And I was like, no, I'm just creating space for this, because if I don't, then it's going to come spilling over at a time that doesn't feel as safe and that makes me more uncomfortable. And so, and then I think, you know, for me, as it got further and further out, I would find, you know, it's commonly used, I think, an analogy of the waves of grief. And I would find that they would get further apart. But I think what I didn't expect is that when they hit, it would be like more intense than I anticipated. It almost felt like as they spread out, then when it did hit, it would be like even more intense.
Yeah. When do you feel like you knew, or how did you know, when you were ready to start taking small steps to go from the early phases where it's like, there's no boundaries, there's no putting anything on the shelf, it's just, this is so intense, there's literally no compartmentalizing, to, okay, I need to put this over here and go do this small errand, or I'm going to, you know, put this over there and step out and do this small thing. What let you know, I think it's time to give this a try?
Yeah, I think it just was like listening to myself and hearing that urge come up in like a really small, quiet voice of like, I want to do something to feel good. And then you have to deal with like the guilt, because I think inevitably you feel a little bit like, but I shouldn't feel good. How could I feel good without him? You know, that's dishonoring him in some way. And thankfully I had some of those other women I had encountered, and I read, you know, blogs online. Like I really found it powerful to read the stories of others who had had a similar experience and were further along on their journey and were like hanging in there. Like I really needed to hear that. And I think that reassured me that like, it's okay to feel that happiness and kind of pull that thread of like, I feel this desire, can I take one step toward feeling that way and see how that goes? And just, again, being with people who I knew, if I decided, okay, I think I want to try going to my favorite coffee shop because I think that would feel good, but if we get in the car and we get a block away and I say, never mind, turn around, that they would honor that.
Mm-hmm. I think I remember, and I might be misremembering this, but I think I remember you sharing that because you had like a barista all the time at the coffee shop and you had like gone there, right? Like so many times. And then the last time that you were there, you were like, yeah, you know, you were pregnant with Jacob and you were anticipating his arrival. And then now all of this has happened and you're thinking like, well, maybe I might, okay, I may be feeling ready to go get a cup of coffee, but it's so overwhelming to think about having that interaction with that person. And they're going to naturally ask questions and like, how am I going to respond? And what is that going to be like? And it's such a, is that, did that happen? Am I remembering
that? Yes. No, okay. You're right.
Wait, what if I just like made up this whole story? I'm like, and then you're barista. But I think that is such a, I mean, that was a very real experience that happened to you. And mm-hmm. it's also such a metaphor for what happens when you go through something like a big grief experience where it's like you see someone before and then you see someone after and you're just like, I don't even know how to explain to you what has just happened like in my life.
Right. Yeah. Especially when it's someone who is like an acquaintance, like a barista mm-hmm. that you interact with on a regular basis, but you don't know on a deep level and you're in a public space. And I actually sent my husband ahead to that coffee shop to tell them, my poor husband, like he's a grieving dad too. But he stepped up and did it and like literally walked in and was like, I mean, I don't know. He didn't recount the whole conversation for me, but I think he like ordered my coffee and was like, and by the way, she's probably going to come back soon. And you need to know like that this happened. And because I had one experience where I was caught off guard it was actually my husband at the time was like wearing a suit to work every day. And so we had delivery dry cleaners, like that they would come pick it up and clean it and bring it back. And the dry cleaning guy was coming up the driveway as I was coming outside. And he was like, oh, look at you. How's the baby? And I just burst into tears and ran back inside the house. And then I realized I can't do that again. So I need to make sure that I've done everything to protect myself from that experience. And so I think that's a huge thing is trying to figure out what, as a grieving person, like your needs are and communicating those to others, which can feel hard and like formal, I don't know, to like share, look, this is something that I'm anticipating is going to be hard. And here's what I need you to do to support me if you're willing. I think about that a lot around like holidays and how you want or don't want that person. For me, it's been want that person like honored and remembered as part of the holiday celebration. That's been huge. It's just finding a way. And sometimes it means like practicing ahead what you're going to say, because for me, I don't know, I'm a person that it's uncomfortable for me to ask things of people, like practicing ahead what I'm going to ask. And, but it helps the people on the other end too, to know, because likely they're trying to figure out how to help you navigate a difficult situation. And it's just helpful all around to try to get clear on that and try to share it. Mm-hmm.
And I think because different people need different things, like everybody does not grieve in the same way. Everybody does not want to navigate it in the same way to be able to share how people can love you well during that time. That is such a great point. Did you feel like when you were going through your own grief, specifically thinking about, you know, with Jacob, and then obviously you have all of your family members who are going through grief about it as well. Did it feel hard ever to look around and see people experiencing grief differently? You know, because I have to imagine, I'm like, I know in my family, I think when my dad passed away, everyone grieved differently. We were not carbon copies of each other in the way that we were sharing about it or the way that we were feeling or the way that we were emoting or any of those things. And I don't know, that can bring its own set of challenges. And so I wonder if you had any experiences with that were challenging, or if it was just like, yeah, everyone was doing it differently. And like, we all just supported each other.
Yeah, no, I definitely had that. And I was really, really thankful for a labor and delivery nurse who cared for me after Jacob was born and passed away. And she had said to me, and I didn't understand it at all at the time that she said it, but she had had a loss herself, like a year prior. Her son had been born still. And she said to me, just prepare yourself that at some point, you're going to think that your husband doesn't care. And you're likely going to be enraged by that thought. And I just want you to know, to save you from like what I went through when I had that experience, that men can grieve so differently sometimes than women and just like talk to him because it can be really hard. And I did, I think months later, I can't remember, Eric was talking to me about something like work related, or he was, I don't know, really upset about something that happened at work. And I was sitting here thinking like, who cares? Our son died. That's whatever's going on at work is like way less of a big deal than, but then I remembered what she said and I said, so I know this probably isn't true, but I just want you to know that like what I'm feeling right now is that you are like done grieving Jacob and you're kind of have moved on. And he was like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. You know, I hate that I made you feel that way. Like, I don't want to be the one who upsets you if you're having a good day. I don't want to. And I was like, don't worry about that. It helps me, again, to the like grief being love, you know, the equivalent of love. Like, it helps me to know that you're feeling that love and that grief as well. And so, yeah, but you're right. People grieve so differently. And I don't know, like, what your experience was with that. Like, did you communicate a lot about it? Or did you just sort of recognize that there were differences, or how did that play out for you all?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I think the way that you two communicated about it was so beautiful. Like, what a great script for anyone who might be in a, you know, going through like a similar scenario to take and to practice, if that feels helpful. I think scripting can be really, really helpful when people are like, okay, yeah, I want to practice like saying those words or saying my version of those words. I think for me, the situation was very different because my husband did grieve the loss of my dad. They were very close, obviously, but, you know, different, not his dad from, you know, growing up. And so we were together in the house, but I think about, you know, like my mom and sister, we weren't all living together. We weren't around each other all of the time. So I think there were less opportunities to maybe notice how things were different. But I think for me, it's very important for me to get to talk about my dad. And I want to talk about him. I want to remember him. I want to talk about when I miss him. And I think not everyone is a verbal processor. And yeah. So for me, I, you know, like my dad just had his birthday, and his birthday is October. He passed away in November. So it's that, you know, it's that time of year where you're like, whoa, things yeah. are, it's raw. It's around the corner. The body remembers the temperature of the air, the leaves, the smells, like all of that.
Yes, that's so true. Yeah.
But I think for me, it's really important for me to talk about him, talk about him to my kids. And I talk about like what I remember with Tim, because that's how I process and how I feel. And I think, you know, not everyone processes or feels that way. So it's so different when you are parents to a child. You know, it's like in some ways you feel like maybe we should be having the same experience, or we have the same, you know, more or less like relationship, and we're together all the time. I think that if that was the case for me, I would probably have more scenarios where I was like, I am noticing that you're grieving very differently, or I'm feeling like maybe you aren't, you know, still in this with me and you've moved on. I can so imagine that. And I think in this scenario, I definitely notice that we all remember my dad in different ways, or need to process in different ways. But I have a lot of peace around like my need to use words to connect with like memories of myself. And that is just who I am and like how I process. And so I'm not surprised that I'm like very verbal about it, because that's like who I've been since I was a little kid. You know, like I want to talk about stuff. I'm such a verbal processor, and I want to use words to express myself.
Yeah, that makes so much sense. And it's just such good self-awareness, I think, to have that.
You brought up something in a couple of different ways that I think also directly relates to this question about like finding hope again. This feeling of, I want to feel good again, or I maybe like want to do something fun, or I maybe want to have an emotionally like positive experience. And is that okay? Am I allowed to do that? Feeling guilt about that. And I think any person probably knows what this feels like collectively, right? It's like when really horrible things are happening in the world, which they always are, but like, especially when it's on like, you know, just a really big, like grand version of that. I think there's a sense collectively of, is it okay for me to like do something fun, or is it okay for me to love my life when other people are suffering? Like that kind of feeling. But when there's personal grief that you're experiencing, it's almost like the volume on that gets turned up so much more. I know you mentioned it was so helpful to see other moms who had gone through this, who were maybe at a slightly different part of their journey, having fun or doing things that brought them joy while still holding the memory of their kiddos like so dear and so, you know, central to their lives. Was there anything else that helped you to process through or let go of the guilt so that you were able to do, you know, those little or bigger things that brought you joy or just allowed you to feel good?
Yeah. So to be honest, I have this like one very specific memory of where I think I kind of turned a corner on this. And it was to your point about like remembering the temperature in the air, and like fall is a time that I can be really reflective about my grief, because I feel like I lost Jacob in July, and in the fall was where I was kind of starting to turn this corner from like the very intense early stages to like, what does this look like for my life? And I always talk about it as like, you don't get over it or you don't move on, but you find a way to carry the grief and the love in a way that can work for you to have like a happy life and to feel joy and to also honor that love and that grief and have it be a part of you. So my very specific memory is walking my dog around the block, and it was almost like I needed this, like in hindsight, it was like a conversation with myself that in which I kind of gave myself permission to let my life be whatever it was going to be. And so I just remember having this thought that this thing that happened to me was horrible, and that like in some way I'll never get over it. I'm always going to miss Jacob. I'm always going to feel like this was wrong and this shouldn't have happened. And there are a couple ways that could take me. And like one path was like, it would be okay. And no one would be able to blame me if this took me down. And this was just, I was never like able to function again. Like I was like, that's a very realistic path this could go. Like I could just cut ties with my old life and just be low and I don't know, just sink to the depths and like live in this pit of grief. And like that would be one way. And then like, I guess my next thought was, or I could focus on my love for him and let that be his legacy in my mind and allow myself to become a better version of myself because of that. So the story that then I could tell is, look at what his short life and the love that he and I and our family shared, like all the positive it's created in my life and the world, versus like focusing on his death and all the hard part. I don't know. It's hard to articulate because you still have to hold space for the hard, but I've just found a lot of power in focusing on the love and the way it's changed me and others for the better.
What a healing legacy that you are carrying on. What has it been like for you to take your experience and allow it to create something in this world that is so supportive and healing for others? Like, how important to your process was creating Alive in My Heart? And, you know, what has that meant to you as part of your, you know, grieving process and as part of carrying on this incredible legacy of love?
Yeah, it's been huge, and in ways that I don't think I could have anticipated when we first got started. Like, I think in some ways when we first got started, it was as much of a help to me as it was to anyone else. And I was like, I need this. So I think other people probably need this. And so we created it, and it was healing to me to have that connection, like, through the organization. And now I just have been feeling a lot lately. Like, one of the first women that I connected with early on was 7 years out from her loss. And I just remember sitting across from her at the coffee shop thinking, like, I can't imagine ever being there. And she had had a couple of babies since, as I now have. And I was just like, I can't imagine, like, look at her. This is incredible what she's doing. And now I'm realizing I'm 7 years out and I'm that person. And for other women who are coming to us and connecting with us, and it's very healing to know that I'm helping in some way others the way that I was helped.
Hi, I'm Simi, your host of the Unmeasured Podcast. I'm also a mindset mentor, intuitive eating counselor, health and life coach, founder of the Unmeasured Movement membership, and author of Letting Go of Leo, How I Broke Up with Perfection. Consider me your personal architect, helping you to build the relationship with yourself that you know in the deepest part of your being you are meant to experience. That's why I created my 6-month private coaching and mentorship program. In this program, I'll work with you one-on-one to help you tap into your wisdom, align with your values, heal your relationship with food and movement, embrace your body, release perfectionism, cultivate deep self-trust, turn up the self-compassion, and live your beautifully imperfect life. If you're ready to experience more peace, pleasure, presence, and purpose in your life, I'd love to support you to do that. Your 6-month coaching and mentorship program is completely personalized support, coaching, guidance, and mentorship. This program includes 12 private coaching sessions and between session support, so you'll truly feel held every step of the way. To learn more about this one-on-one experience, read client stories, and request a consultation, head to simibodich.com/coaching. I'm here to help you build the relationship with yourself you truly deserve. I can't wait to connect.
Hopefully able to give them some hope that there is positive to be found, and there is a way to carry your grief that can be lighter. And yeah, to honor him in that way, to know that he has a legacy in this world through me in some way. It feels like I get to parent, I have to parent my living kids. Some moments are more get to, other moments are more have to. You're a parent, you know.
Depends on the moment, depends on the day.
Yeah. The mood. Yes. In so many ways that I will always grieve that I don't get to with Jacob, but my parenting, I see it as my parenting in a different way of him. And that makes me feel like, you know, we still have a relationship that has grown and evolved, not the way I would have liked. You know, I'd rather see him. I'd rather have his school pictures. I'd rather, you know, get to go trick-or-treating with him. But in a way that has beauty and happiness and love.
That is so beautiful, Elizabeth. What are some of your favorite ways right now in this season of life to get to have him with you or to remember him? I know you mentioned like the holidays, that there are certain things that you really love to do and, you know, your favorite ways to remember him. Like what are some of the ways that you do that holiday time or, you know, any other time during the year that feel really meaningful for you right now?
Yeah. So his birthday is July 18th. And so we always do something together as a family to honor his birthday. And like one of my pregnancy cravings with him was ice cream. So that's usually involved somehow. So we try to make it specific to him in some way. You know, that's hard to do when you don't have like living memories with someone, but then I think just like spending time as a family, I just kind of imagine him smiling down at, you know, his siblings and us making memories together in his honor. At the holidays, we, as you know, we moved to a new town a couple of years ago. And one of the things they do, they have like a candlelight walking tour early December, and they line the streets with evergreen trees that are lit up. And you can like reserve one. A lot of businesses do it as like a sponsorship thing. So last year, for the first time, we sponsored one in memory of Jacob, and the kids made ornaments. And I would like to have it be like an angel baby tree, like beyond just Jacob, in future years, to, you know, be able to honor other babies as well. If other families want to make something or have us make something for them. So that's something I'm thinking about for this year, is to try to make it even bigger. But that's a really special way. What about you? I'd love to hear like special memories of your dad that you've carried on, or, you know, remembrance observances that you've incorporated since he passed.
Yeah. Well, I absolutely love the visual of all of those evergreen trees, like lining the streets lit up. That sounds magical. And I know that you live in a very like a magical town now. And I love that they do that around the holidays. I'm like, maybe we can get over there like this winter and check it out. I feel like we need to. That would be awesome. Such beautiful ways to remember him. I think we have a picture. It's off camera right now, but right over to my left, we have a picture framed of my dad. And it's so fun because the kids talk about him all the time, and they'll point like that's data, and they'll, you know, like ask questions about him. And so I think like I want to talk about him. I love like bringing him into conversations with the kids. That feels really special. He passed away when Osh was one. So he and Osh did get to meet, and he never met Yazzie. And so I think like, for me, I want them to feel like, even though they don't get to grow up with their data, that he still was like part of their life and part of their experience. So lots of storytelling. They love to ask questions like, what was he like? And this and that. One of the most wild things, though, has been how much my son, Osh, is so much like him. So he comes up a lot in conversations because Osh will make a facial expression, and Tim and I, or like if my sister's home or my mom's over, we'll just look at each other and we're like, whoa, that was like just like my dad. And when Osh was born, like for the first year of his life, he very much looked like a Simeone. He looked like a Simeone. That's my, you know, husband's side of the family. And then as soon as my dad passed away, he started to like physically transform into like a mini version of my dad. And he just got glasses, and my dad always wore glasses. And it's just wild how similar they look. And things will happen. Like Osh woke up on Father's Day, and he's like, I talked to Data in my dream last night, and he wanted you to know that he loves you. Like just first thing in the morning. And I was like, this is so wild. But I just think like that connection, you know?
Yes. Yes. I love that. Oh my gosh. I mean, he is part of them, mm-hmm. and you're seeing that play out, and like, what a beautiful job you and Tim have done of sharing those memories. And sometimes it strikes me like how much my daughter, especially who's six, will bring up death. And I have this momentary like, oh, is this okay? But then I'm
we
like,
talk,
you know,
about
what?
It a lot over here too.
What a beautiful thing to have it not be fearful, you know, like a fearful prospect for them. And it is a part of life. And I'm just glad that your kids feel comfortable bringing up your dad, their grandfather, and that my kids feel comfortable bringing up Jacob, because it allows them to still be part of our family and, you know, to create new memories, not the way we would like to, but the way that we can, just based on those family interactions that we have, remembering them. And yeah, I find that to be healing as well, to, because I think a lot of the early grief is fear that they're going to be forgotten, or that, you know, we're going to move on or not talk about them again. And so it's just, it's helpful and hopeful to know that that's not the case, and that there's a way to keep their memories alive and keep them a part of your day to day.
I do think that that is such a way to bring hope into the grieving process, that you really can keep them with you and you can remember them. And I love what you said about how you can continue to make memories with them, not necessarily in your ideal way or the way that you, you know, would ultimately love to, but in the way that you can. Such a beautiful way to think about it. Elizabeth, thank you so much for this conversation. I'm just so deeply grateful for your willingness to talk about these really hard things. And I am in awe of the way that you have created this beautiful legacy of love around Jacob.
Oh, thank you, Simi. It's so good to talk to you always. And yeah, just thank you for holding space for this and sharing your experience with your dad and all the beautiful ways that he is still so much a part of your life and your family's life.
Thank you so much. I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Unmeasured Podcast. If you did, I'd love you to subscribe, rate, review, and share the podcast so that we can reach more people who are looking to live unmeasured. If you're ready for more, come hang with me on Instagram at Simi Bowditch. Sign up for a 7-day free trial of Unmeasured, the virtual bar membership that celebrates your body and never shames it, at movementunmeasured.com. Or visit simibowditch.com to get my weekly emails and learn more about my coaching and mentorship offerings. Thanks for joining me today. I can't wait to see you next time.